Hello, and welcome to the Arizona Daily Sun. I'm Helen Hudgens Farrell, and we will be reading from the Arizona Daily Sun, dated Tuesday, November 19th, 2024. Looking at the front page, the stories, the pictorial story is about the final frontier in Flagstaff. Hundreds of people listen to dignitaries and Lowell Observatory leadership speak during the ribbon-cutting ceremony at the grand opening of the Marley Foundation Astronomy Discovery Center on Saturday. And then our top story, endangered Mexican gray wolf found dead west of Flagstaff. One of two known Mexican gray wolves in northern Arizona was found dead west of Flagstaff on Thursday, November 7th. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Arizona Game and Fish Department announced Friday. Wolf F2979, recently christened Hope by Flagstaff students, was first observed near Flagstaff in early summer 2024 and fitted with a tracking collar in July. She was known to be roaming with at least one other wolf nicknamed Mystery. The cause of the wolf's death is under investigation, although the agency stated in their press release that the mortality was not related to agency management actions. Because Mexican wolves are a federally protected endangered species, the agencies are offering a reward of up to $103,500 for information that leads to a successful prosecution. The announcement was a tough blow for supporters of wolves in this region. "I was so sad when I heard this news," said Cindy Twell, Arizona and New Mexico director of the Western Watersheds Project. "I had been camping up in the area where this wolf was over the summer, and I heard howling and I saw wolf tracks. I didn't see the wolf itself, but I definitely was really excited that she was there. To hear that she's been killed is just devastating. After being driven to the brink of extinction in the 1970s, Mexican gray wolves were reintroduced within the Mexican wolf experimental population area, which spans much of Arizona and New Mexico south of Interstate 40. As their population has grown to at least 250 wolves across both states, some wolves have disappeared beyond the Mexican wolf experimental population area. Earlier this fall, Fish and Wildlife and Arizona Game and Fish Department announced their intention to capture and relocate Hope and Mystery back to the Mexican wolf experimental population area, a plan that was met with pushback from wolf advocates. "Wolves were here historically," said Taylor McKinnon, Southwest director at the Center for Biological Diversity. "They were an important part of the ecosystem across the Mogollon Rim and the Grand Canyon country. The region," he said, "is fantastic wolf habitat, lots of elk, lots of prey, lots of big, wide, open spaces. We've had several wolves over the years dispersing from the Mexican wolf experimental population area up into the area around Flagstaff," McKinnon said. "But Hope was unique among them, in that she was a female and she appeared to be paired up with another wolf. That held hope that we could have a breeding pair here in northern Arizona and began to repopulate northern Arizona and the Grand Canyon region with wolves. In 2021, a lone Mexican gray wolf designated M2520 and nicknamed Anubis crossed the I-40 into an area where hope and mystery would later reside. After Arizona Game and Fish agents relocated Anubis back to the Mexican wolf experimental population area, he beelined straight back, Twell said. It's not only people who think this is good habitat for wolves. The wolves are voting with their paws and telling us it is, she said. Claire Musser, executive director of the Grand Canyon Wolf Recovery Project, described the Mexican wolf experimental population area's northern limit at I-40 as an arbitrary boundary. Wolves moving into northern Arizona, she said, are showing us that they what they need. They're showing us where they want to go. Hope and mystery, Musser said, found ideal territory and a place to call their own. They're trailblazers. We need these trailblazing wolves. Anubis was shot and killed in January 2022 on the Kaibab National Forest, west of Flagstaff. No perpetrator has been publicly identified in that case. Hope was also found dead on the Kaibab National Forest in the vicinity of East Spring Valley Road and Forest Service Road 2058, between Flagstaff and Williams. Representatives of Fish and Wildlife and Arizona Game and Fish declined to provide any additional comment at this time, citing the ongoing law enforcement investigation. McKinnon hopes that the loss of another wolf will inspire greater reintroduction work. I heard from so many people here in Flagstaff who were really elated that we had a pack here, he said. This should be cause for everyone to double down on recovery efforts in the Grand Canyon region. Anyone with information that may assist in the investigation can contact Fish and Wildlife Service special agents in Pine Top by calling 346-254-0515. And our next front page story, a different kind of forest partnership. The Coconino National Forest is home to the world's largest contiguous ponderosa pine forest. And like many forests in the western United States, the Coconino evolved alongside frequent fire. Before the late 19th century, low severity wildfires occurred every 7 to 8 years, burning away small ponderosa pine trees and leaving large trees intact. This regular burning interval maintained a healthy equilibrium in which surviving trees had less competition for sunlight, water, and nutrients and grew large and strong. At the same time, wildfires remained small because vegetation was regularly burned. Today, in the absence of frequent fire, forests have become dense and overgrown, increasing the risk of catastrophic wildfire. Thinning helps reduce tree density to historical levels, preventing wildfires from spreading into tree crowns and allowing sunlight and water to nourish the forest floor. This promotes healthy grasses and plants, providing watershed protection and vital habitat for wildlife. Removing trees from historically open areas like meadows restores these landscapes, benefiting species such as deer, elk, Bebb's willow, and wildflowers. Thinning and vegetation removal facilitates the return of low-intensity fire through prescribed or managed burns and provides the best opportunity for reducing risks and moderating fire behavior, thus ensuring forest and community resilience. NEPA and timber sale planning. Thinning projects are conducted year-round in the Coconino National Forest, and before thinning can begin, projects undergo analysis through the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. The projects ensure environmental impacts are carefully considered, with continuous input from wildlife, recreation, botany, archaeology, and hydrology experts. Foresters meticulously plan each project, marking trees for removal or retention based on silvicultural prescriptions, making note of trail locations, wildlife drinkers, view sheds, fence lines, or other features that are protected in the restoration contract. Every timber sale has a unique silvicultural prescription that guides how to cut trees to meet project objectives. A silvicultural prescription is similar to a doctor's prescription in that it analyzes the health of a patient, in our case, an area of trees, and issues a treatment plan. Prescriptions take into consideration forest conditions, and project objectives. For example, if an area was once a meadow with few trees, the prescription will include instructions to cut more trees. Larger trees stay in the forest, while smaller ones are processed into products such as lumber and biomass. This planning process involves thorough coordination and can take 2 to 3 years. Marking crews then use orange paint to mark trees to retain and blue for removal. Timber staff advertise and review bids, selecting contractors for thinning, with local businesses like lumber mills and thinning crews benefiting from these operations. Lasting partnerships. Logging may seem at odds with forest health, but those familiar with land management know it is part of the solution and a means to support healthy forests, post-wildfire recovery efforts, and our local economy. There is a mutually beneficial relationship in treating critical landscapes through the wildfire crisis strategy and supporting communities to leverage and increase forest restoration. Forest projects provide jobs, material for construction, vibrant economies, and especially in rural communities, support an entire way of life. The timber industry continues to adapt, and our modern loggers focus on sustainable practices that create profitability and are good for our forests and our local communities, said Jake Dolan, Flagstaff Ranger District Timber Staff. We have a process where we can do what type of work in our local partners in timber industry that accomplish this work are an essential part of the solution. The timber industry is a crucial partner in the wildlife crisis strategy, exemplified by the Wing East project. This project is critical to protect the Upper Rio de Flag watershed, the San Francisco Peaks, and over 190 residences. Congressional funding supports the thinning, timber stand improvement, and biomass removal, Dolan said. Perkins Timber Harvesting, awarded the Wing East contract, demonstrates how local companies can enhance forest health and community economics. With 59 years of experience and strong partnerships, James Perkins Company efficiently processes smaller diameter material, selling to various mills and bioenergy facilities. Perkins Timber Harvesting can mobilize operations immediately into new sale areas, which increases the overall pace and scale of forest restoration and reduction of hazardous conditions, Dolan said. Our mills have capacity of 2,500 to 3,000 acres per year, and we continue our family timber tradition of entrepreneurial dedication to build relationships to accomplish this important work. Suarez Forestry, LLC, another local logging company led by Devin Suarez, continues a 70-plus year family logging legacy. Founded in 2017, the company focuses on forest restoration, leveraging partnerships to navigate the industry's strengths and challenges. Partnerships have been key to our success, and the timber industry is both strong and fragile at the same time, Suarez said. The sawmills we deliver to create diversity in our customer base, adding stability to our business, and it is essential the Forest Service provides the acres needed to keep the business running. Both Dolan and Suarez recognize logging as vital to restoration and community resilience. Their fourth generation businesses remain essential partners in advancing forest restoration in northern Arizona and are just two of the many timber companies that Coconino is working with to implement the wildfire crisis strategy, finding creative solutions. Similar forest restoration efforts are occurring on state and private lands beyond the Coconino. Partners such as the Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management, private landowners, and other organizations are focused on broader restoration goals. The Arizona Department of Forestry and Fire Management is protecting watersheds across all land ownerships and revitalizing Arizona's forest products industry. Our partners are essential to complete this restoration work, and building economic opportunity supports timber industry jobs and creates resilient forests, which contributes to a resilient economy and communities, John Palek, Northern Arizona District Forester, said. The sheer number of partnerships and relationships it takes to restore our forests and support our communities is more than just the Forest Service. It takes all of us to reach our restoration objectives. The partnership between the USDA Forest Service and the state of Arizona has long fostered trust, collaboration, and improved forest health. This partnership was recently formalized through a shared stewardship agreement signed by USDA Undersecretary Homer Wilkes and Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs on October 10, 2024. Through this newly signed agreement, continued work will take place to share data and tools to support collaborative partnerships as a proven approach for landscape-scale forest restoration and protect our communities and watersheds. As the Coconino National Forest continues this essential work with partners, federal and state agencies, businesses, private landowners, communities, and indigenous tribes to restore forests, we are leveraging partners, expertise to advance mutually beneficial actions, modernize forest product delivery, and create economic opportunities. Looking ahead, our next story will highlight and showcase the Coconino National Forest and our partners' success over the past year in the wildfire crisis strategy and restoration work, ultimately benefiting our broader community. And the next front page story, Coffee Inn brings bakery options to Flag. Soon after taking over Karen's gluten-free bakery in Sedona more than a year ago, Anastasia McPherson knew opening another location would be next. With custom orders and customers arriving from Flagstaff on weekends, and proposals to open franchise locations coming in, it almost seemed inevitable that the business would expand. And that's how the Coffee Inn, located at 121 East Birch in downtown Flagstaff, was born. We've been looking for a location for a long time before we decided on this, said McPherson, who lives in Flagstaff and had been trekking down to Sedona regularly. This has been empty for over a year, almost 2 years. It was a lot of work here. It took double the time that they had told us. Opening in July, the Coffee Inn offers numerous baked items that would be familiar to customers of Karen's in Sedona. In addition to various coffee and tea options, and salads and sandwiches for lunches, as the name states, Karen's has focused on baked goods that appeal to those looking for either gluten-free or vegan options. McPherson began working at Karen's soon after moving to Flagstaff in 2022, having worked at a classic French bakery while living in Massachusetts. That's when I started thinking that I wanted to be more a part of having my own bakery or coffee shop, McPherson said. I just enjoy the atmosphere of coffee shops, the smell of everything. After working at Karen's and learning from the original owner, McPherson began to realize she had a knack for the work and began to explore what else she might be able to create. Working to adjust recipes to become gluten or dairy-free, McPherson then blended that with ideas gathered during her time living in areas of Europe. Among those ideas was treating the shops as something more similar to a community gathering space. Inside of Coffee Inn, McPherson created a space for children to play and has plans to offer weekly activities for kids inside the shop. Baking classes that don't involve an oven and art or music classes are all ideas McPherson said she has thought about, as those kinds of activities are common for coffee shops in Europe. While the plan for the business has been in place, both in Sedona and Flagstaff, McPherson said the work has now been on getting more signage up and marketing the business, so customers know it has expanded to Flagstaff. McPherson still regularly travels between the two locations, with much of the baking done in Sedona, while preparation work on other menu items is done in Flagstaff. The additional location, allowing for an expanded customer base, has actually made much of the baking an easier task. It just makes sense when you think about it, McPherson said. The baking, it's easy for me to make 45 cupcakes and split it into two, then make 12 only for one location. McPherson said she found bars have grown into a popular item because of their ability to last longer and be more convenient for people on the go than something like a cupcake. With baked breakfast items and bars that can be taken to hikes in Sedona growing in popularity, McPherson noted how important it's been to have items that won't melt. With Thanksgiving and Christmas ahead, McPherson has begun to take advance orders for seasonal pies, breads, or cakes. Options include pecan pie, peanut butter pie, cheesecake, and dinner rolls, with bacon dinner rolls or chickpea dinner roll options for gluten and dairy-free customers. Though a specific list of options for Christmas isn't finalized just yet, McPherson said some similar options would be available. Last year in Sedona, McPherson found cookie platters to be popular among customers for special events or family gatherings, again available for those looking for a vegan option. Those interested in their options for the holidays were encouraged to visit the coffee inn and find out what might be available for their celebration. It's very important to know why we're going to be different from, like, Safeway or Sam's Club, McPherson said. It's gluten-free, dairy-free, all of my nuts and crusts are pretty much organic, and they're made with no processed sugar. It's coconut sugar, organic, and maple sugar, which is obviously also more family-oriented. Individual slices for smaller get-togethers are also available. McPherson estimates that special orders for Thanksgiving would be needed around November 25th, with the holiday falling on Thursday, November 28th this year. The Coffee Inn is open Monday to Saturday from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. and can be found on Instagram at coffeeinbakery. The top story on the local Arizona page, universities assessed on student critical thinking. The Arizona Board of Regents, or ABOR, University Governance and Operations Committee, heard the results of critical thinking assessment across the three public state universities last Thursday as part of its assessment of new general education curricula. A review of more than 500 samples of student work at Northern Arizona found that 78% of the samples met or exceeded expectations for both argumentation and evaluation of evidence, while 62% did so for analysis, interpretation, and reflection, and 78% did so for conclusions, outcomes, and meaning making. Students who were later in their college careers, meaning either juniors or seniors, had a larger proportion of samples that met or exceeded expectations in each area. ABOR adopted a new general education policy in 2020 after beginning to develop it in 2017. The three universities then developed individual general education frameworks, with the University of Arizona beginning implementation in 2022 and Arizona State University in 2024. And NAU planned for fall 2025. Since 2022, ABOR has heard an assessment of one of four key skills for graduating students each November. Written communications was in 2022, followed by quantitative reasoning in 2023, and critical thinking earlier this month. After assessment results of the final skill civic knowledge are presented next November, the board plans to keep reviewing student results in these areas on a four-year cycle. The data was presented to the communities November 7th by A Board Chief Academic Officer Andrew Comrie and Tri-University Assessment Group Chair Emily Manone, who works at NAU. Comrie noted that the first assessments of these skills are happening as the new general education programs are being implemented across the university system. To assess critical thinking, the universities were rated on four dimensions: argumentation, evaluation of evidence, analysis, interpretation, and reflection, and conclusions, outcomes, and meaning making. Each university used over 500 samples of student work in a variety of disciplines and trained faculty raters to do so. Comrie noted that the scores are not comparable between the universities because each has a different general education program, is in a different phase of implementing the program, and use different sampling constraints. For example, ASU used upper-level courses for samples in this assessment, while U of A used sophomore and capstones, and NAU had a mix of students early and later in their college careers. Also, ASU and NAU assessed their general education programs before the new ones were implemented, while U of A assessed its new general education program shortly after it began. Instead, the results are meant to show the outcomes of the new general education programs and provide a baseline for future assessments of each area. The next assessment of critical thinking, for example, will come in 4 years after all three new general education programs are more established at the universities. A significant impact of this assessment on each of our institutions has really been that we've been able to elevate conversations around Gen Ed amongst our faculty, our campus leadership, and our students, Manone said. This will only serve to help our students have a deeper understanding of what our Gen Ed programs are and help our students find deeper meaning and value in their general education experiences. Regent Larry Pinley added, "The real purpose of the assessment is not to compare NAU to ASU or ASU to U of A, but instead to really look deeply at how we are developing our general education in that area and what changes we need to make to raise the level, for example, of critical thinking." He asked that the assessment team develop a common approach to sampling across the universities for future assessments of areas within general education. A recording of this meeting can be found on ABOR's YouTube page at youtube.com/@ABOR News. You're tuned to Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you're listening to the Arizona Daily Sun. Looking at the brief today, NPS seeking public comment on Wapaki Wilderness Lands. Wapaki National Monument is requesting public feedback on a draft wilderness study and environmental assessment, or EA, through December 12th. The study/EA includes four alternatives examining if and where congressionally designated wilderness should be proposed within the monument. The EA complies with the National Environmental Policy Act requirement to provide a decision-making framework that evaluates potential issues and impacts to the area's resources and values. The National Park Service, or NPS, completed a wilderness eligibility assessment for the park in 2013. And since that time, 34,194 acres of land, or 96.5% of the monument's total acreage, has been managed in accordance with NPS wilderness policy. The NPS preferred alternative identifies 33,916 acres of land, approximately 95.7% of the monument, for review by the NPS director and potential transmittal to the Secretary of the Interior as a wilderness proposal. In the preferred alternative, all lands that were previously determined ineligible for inclusion in the National Wilderness Preservation System would remain ineligible. Approximately 283 acres that were previously determined eligible but found not to possess the characteristics of wilderness would be determined ineligible and would not be proposed for wilderness designation. More information on the draft can be found on the project website. The park will host a virtual public meeting on Wednesday, November 20th from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. to provide an overview of the draft wilderness study and address questions. The purpose of the meeting is to share information about the study and environmental assessment, including the planning process and how to provide comments on the study/EA using the project website. To access the link for the meeting, visit the project website at parkplanning.nps.gov/WUPA Wild and click on Meeting Notices. The park is particularly interested in comments that provide new information, questions, or ideas that improve or challenge the alternatives and ultimately strengthen the study. Submit comments by December 12th online at parkplanning.nps.gov/WUPA Wild or by mail to Denver Service Center Planning Division, Attention Wapatki, WS/Tom Gibney, 1 Federal Center, Building 50, P.O. Box 25287, Denver, Colorado 80225. Public comments will not be accepted verbally or by fax or email. Written comments on the plan must be submitted online or postmarked by December 12th to be considered. After public comments are received, park staff may adjust components of the preferred alternative as necessary before finalizing the study and environmental assessment. The next brief, History of Presidential Campaign, showcased in new exhibit. Northern Arizona University has partnered with the Museum of Democracy to bring an exhibition of items related to U.S. presidential campaigns to Klein Library. Called Path to the American Presidency, Road to the White House, the exhibit includes campaign memorabilia and political art ranging from George Washington to the present, as well as items from major social movements throughout the country's history. It is free to view in the Klein Library's first floor exhibit gallery during library hours. The exhibit is open to university students and employees, as well as the Flagstaff community, and will be on display through March 2025. Items for the exhibit are from the Wright Family Collection, which is the foundation for the Museum of Democracy. The partnership with NAU is funded by an Arizona Board of Regents, or ABOR, grant. Klein Library's Dean and University Librarian, Cynthia Childray, said in the announcement that there couldn't be a better time for this exhibit. Path to the American Presidency is as compelling as political campaigns themselves, she said. It serves to give students and the community a window into the rich history of presidential elections past and present, encourages civic engagement, and encourages students to consider pathways to leadership roles themselves. According to the announcement, the exhibition contains the nation's largest and most comprehensive collections of historical and political art and campaign memorabilia. It looks at marketing, especially through buttons, in political campaigns from Washington to both current presidential candidates. With a historical election right around the corner, this exhibition is opening at a pivotal time, said Museum of Democracy Chair Austin C. Wright. We are grateful to ABOR and NAU for believing in the importance of our efforts to get students engaged in the democratic process by understanding where we've been, and hope that those who explore the exhibition find inspiration among its contents. More about hours, location, and parking for the Klein Library can be found at nau.edu/library or by calling 928-224-2173. Our next brief: Haven Walker Music Scholarship applications now open. The Haven Walker Music Scholarship Fund announced that applications are now open for its fourth year of scholarships. Students in the Flagstaff area who are currently enrolled in grades 8 through 11, including previous recipients of the scholarship, can apply for the award through January 31, 2025. The fund will be giving five $1,500 scholarships for local student musicians to further their musical journeys through music lessons or instrument purchase and rentals. According to the announcement, the applications will be judged on musical talent and a commitment to the student's musical journey. The scholarship fund is run by the Flagstaff Music Festival, which is a nonprofit. Scholarships will be announced in March before a public award ceremony in April. Bob and Pena Miller started the Haven Walker Music Scholarship in 2021 to honor their son, Haven Walker. Haven was an amazing musician, son, father, and friend to all, the announcement said. He was a staple for 20 years in the Flagstaff music scene, playing guitar, sarod, and crossing many music genres. His untimely passing has us mourning still, but his legacy will continue through this scholarship fund. More information, including how to apply, is available at havenwalker.org/apply.html. And our final brief: Health and Human Services warns against unlicensed food vendors. Coconino County Health and Human Services, or CCHHS, noticed a rise in unlicensed food vendors throughout Coconino County. According to the county, the vendors pose a high risk of serious foodborne illness due to unsanitary conditions and suggests avoiding them. Generally operating near sidewalks, in parking lots, and on the side of roadways, the vendors have not been inspected or licensed by CCHHS. The county suggests visually seeing a license or permit displayed that shows approval by CCHHS Environmental Health. Additionally, cottage food vendors approved by the Arizona Department of Health Services to sell food made in home kitchens also must have a certificate of approval to operate. Permits and licenses issued by CCHHS require vendors to follow food safety practices such as hand washing, maintaining proper food temperatures, and obtaining food from approved sources. These guidelines reduce the risk of foodborne illness. Certificates issued under the Cottage Food Program by the Arizona Department of Health Services also require vendors to follow important food safety practices, including packaging and labeling the food items with a clear ingredient list. Those with concerns about a food operation or who have become ill from eating at a food establishment or street vendor are asked to contact CCHHS Environmental Health at 928-679-8760 or environmentalhealth@coconino.az.gov. Our next story, big changes coming for the Daily Sun Flag Live. Some big changes are in store for the Daily Sun. Starting in January, Flag Live will be published and distributed twice a month instead of once a month. The reasoning behind this decision is simple. Flagstaff has a robust arts, entertainment, and cultural scene, and residents deserve a fresher publication that highlights the events, happenings, and personalities our region has to offer. Flag Live had been published weekly prior to the pandemic. The magazine recently celebrated its 30th anniversary. Look for it in your Daily Sun, on your e-edition at azdailysun.com, or at multiple free distribution locations throughout Flagstaff on the first and third Thursday of each month. We're not waiting until the new year to start rolling out some of our other changes. Starting Thursday, we will begin publishing regular columns from Northern Arizona healthcare providers and professionals. These rotating writers will address healthcare issues pertinent to residents of Flagstaff and the greater Northern Arizona region. Their columns will run every third Thursday of the month. In the coming months, we'll be adding topical columns from professionals in other fields as well. Our plan is to get more local voices into the paper on a consistent basis, speaking about matters that are important to us all. Daily Sun readers are accustomed to outstanding photography from chief photographer Jake Bacon and staff photographer Hattie Loper. Starting soon, they and other Sun staffers will be adding regular video contributions to the rotation. These video clips and features will be prominently displayed on azdailysun.com, both on the home page and in story. And that's not all. Managing editor Chris Etling and his staff consistently strive to provide readers with the most relevant and accurate content in as timely a manner as possible. To that end, we will be making every effort to get more news and information in the paper and online in 2025 and beyond. The Daily Sun has been an institution in Flagstaff in Coconino County since 1883. At 143 years old, we may be approaching middle age, but we're not planning to slow down anytime soon. And the next story, Gallego says his party needs to stoke working class roots. Building authentic connections with working class voters can help Democrats find their way back to power in Washington, incoming Democratic Senator-elect Ruben Gallego of Arizona said Friday. Taking stock of election results that showed him doing significantly better than other Arizona Democrats, Gallego said he put a lot of work into telling his compelling life story and connecting with voters. As a result, Gallego said, even as voters grew skeptical of the Democrats, they believed him when he said he would look out for regular people. People got to know who I was and what my values were, and so that they got to know me as Reuben, the Marine veteran, Reuben the dad, Reuben the working class kid who has lived the American dream, and wants you to live the American dream, Gallego told the Associated Press. And I think when things started going bad, we were able to resist the tide because people knew me and they had a perspective of me. They knew I was fighting for them. Gallego defeated Republican Kerry Lake by 2.4 percentage points, even as fellow Democrat Kamala Harris lost to President-elect Donald Trump by 5.5 points in Arizona. That's a nearly 8-point swing for the Democrats from the top of the ticket to the Senate race. Gallego overcame a hardscrabble childhood to become Arizona's first Latino senator. He was largely raised by a single mother after his father left the family and was imprisoned for dealing drugs, leaving Gallego to work multiple jobs to help with bills while in high school. He was accepted to Harvard University, joined the Marines, and fought in Iraq with a unit that sustained heavy casualties. The story featured prominently in Gallego's campaign speeches and advertising. Democrats don't need to have such a harrowing life story to succeed in tough races, he said, but they do need to relate to the voters they're asking to trust them. What's most important is for you as a candidate to be able to connect with everyday voters and make sure they understand in you and see in you that you are gonna fight for them, Gallego said. It doesn't necessarily have to be the same story as me, but somehow you need to be able to connect to and be able to do it an authentic way. Voters need to believe that Democrats are for the working class over elites and small businesses over large corporations, he added. We need to be able to go back to our economic roots where we are literally known and understood as being for working families, Gallego said. AP VoteCast, a sweeping survey of more than 4,000 voters in Arizona, shows Gallego won Hispanic men against Lake, even though Harris and Trump split them in Arizona. Young men of all races and ethnicities broke for Trump in the presidential race, but were evenly divided between Lake and Gallego in the Senate contest, according to AP VoteCast. Overall, about 1 in 10 Trump voters split their ticket to vote for Gallego, while very few Harris voters also chose Lake. Among members of the two major parties, only about 8 in 10 Arizona Republicans voted for the combination of Trump and Lake, whereas about 9 in 10 Arizona Democrats voted for Harris and Gallego. Gallego is wrapping up his term in the House and will take his Senate seat in January, replacing Kyrsten Sinema, who was elected as a Democrat and later became an independent. Despite being fiercely critical of Sinema's steadfast opposition to ending the Senate's filibuster rule, Gallego said Friday he would not vote to eliminate it if Republicans try to do so. "It's not my job to make their job easier," Gallego said. There are several pictures from the Children's Fall Entrepreneur Craft Fair at Findlay Honda on Saturday. The event was organized by the Shadows Foundation, featured 25 booths operated by more than 30 children between the ages of 7 and 17 who got to sell their wares and learn about running a business. And in sports, Panthers ousted in first round. The Coconino Panthers football team could not find its footing Friday night against the Mica Mountain Thunderbolts on Friday. The Thunderbolts delivered a commanding 45-10 victory at home in the first round of the 4A Conference State Tournament in Tucson, ending number 13 seeded Coconino's season. And the NAU Roundup. Men earned spot at National Cross Country Meet. The Northern Arizona men's cross country team is going to the national meet after it earned one of 13 at-large bids into the race. The men will now join the women's cross country crew at the national championships. The men finished third as a team and were 10 points away from one of two auto-qualifying spots at the NCAA Mountain Regional Meet that were earned by BYU and New Mexico. It was the first time Northern Arizona had not received an auto bid since 2015. And NAU football, Lumberjacks best Bears on road. The 25th-ranked Northern Arizona football team can finally begin to put talk of past failures behind it, at least a little bit. The Lumberjacks secured a winning record for a season, not including the 5-game 2021 spring campaign, for the first time since 2017 with a 43-3 win over Northern Colorado Bears on Saturday in Greeley, Colorado. Thank you for joining us for news from the Arizona Daily Sun.